1000, the podcast where we dive into the history of things familiar to everybody. Join us as we try to figure out why everything exists.
Ooh, I'm your host, Sam Acuff.
And I'm Baron Malley.
And today we're continuing Monster Trucks.
Are you okay?
I think I stroked out there for a second. I don't know what that was.
For you were burning a lot of plastic, in between recording sessions.
I don't want to get too graphic, breathing but, in the fumes. I don't want to put anyone off, but that voice was 100% because as you were doing your intro, I got bored and I squeezed my nipple and that's the voice that came out.
I honestly didn't know if that was the real you or if who I'm talking to now is the real you. I am so lost in what your identity is.
When we concluded part one, Bob Chandler and Bigfoot had just gotten started on their sideshow journey to entertain crowds with Bigfoot's larger-than-life presence. This, of course, only being made possible by the accumulation and culture that fringe car mod enthusiasts built over the previous 50 years. But in case you haven't, you'll probably want to go back and listen to part one to learn more about that. But today, we're going to cover how we ended up in monster truck industry that we know today.
That's right. We're going all the way back to the land of Sony Walkmans and electric hair bands. And I'm talking about the year 1981, which is the year that Bigfoot finally goes over the top. Ooh. I actually don't know anything about 1981.
That became pretty obvious pretty quickly. But please, continue.
But what I do know is that two things happened this year that any monster truck historian worth his weight in snuff and hot dogs would mark on the timeline as significant. Number one, the movie Take This Job and Shove It debuted to the American public, and although it wasn't an Oscar winner, it still made $12 million at the box office. It was a sneaky hit. This movie featured Bigfoot in a racing scene pitted against another monster truck, and this caused a lot of people to put their fingers to their lips and raise an eyebrow. After filming Take This Job and Shove It, Bob Chandler finds himself one afternoon again in 1981. Watching the worldwide world of
the worldwide wide world of sports.
Kind of makes you want to say that though, does it?
Are you thinking of the wide world of sports? Okay.
Yeah. I guess.
How
wide is this world?
It's worldwide. Yeah. For those of you who are unfamiliar, this was a program broadcast on ABC in the 80s, and I think it ran until the early 90s, that was intended to be a fill-in show during the summer season before fall sports started up again. The program basically showcased sports from around the globe that were seldom, if ever, broadcast to on American television, including eventually, you would see monster trucks on it. But in this instance, I don't know. Do you want to tell it?
Chandler witnessed a Toyota pickup drive its front tires onto a couple of cars that were half buried in the ground, and Chandler said,
"Our trucks could drive clean over those cars, I bet. Golly gee."
A few weeks later, Chandler and a few of his friends acquired a few wrecked cars, an empty field, and a six-pack later. Bob and his truck did exactly what he reckoned they would.
We drove clear over those trucks, just like I told Marilyn, my wife, we could. And she said, "Bob, what are you doing with those silly trucks?" I said, "Marilyn, those trucks aren't silly. They're monster trucks. Silly? They're not silly trucks. They're monster trucks. Don't be silly." Anyway, yeah, they decided to videotape it. And he showed the video of himself going over the cars to a promoter because at this point he already had kind of a successful career promoting his own business with Bigfoot. And he did at this point have a couple paid for events under his belt. That first paid for event, by the way, that I mentioned in episode one or part one in Detroit, that's where Monster Truck got coined, turns out. The guy that put on that event was the first one to tell Bob Chandler that these were monster trucks.
Now, wait a minute, Bob. We're going to come up with a name so we can really get this truck out here.
Well, my wife really likes silly trucks.
Yeah. Yeah, we could. No. Silly trucks? Silly trucks, that's not going to work.
I told her it was bad. I told her it was a bad idea.
What about Giganto trucks?
Well, Giganto's not a word.
Yeah, we can't really fit that on a sign, can we?
Well, wait. I would. Nope. Yeah, what?
No, I got
after,
it.
After you.
I got it. Largarious trucks.
That's
because they're larger than large.
I appreciate it, and I would appreciate it more if you stopped putting your cigarette out on me as you as you brainstorm these. You're actually sitting on me, and
why don't we just go with monster trucks? Call it a day.
Please get off me.
Anyway, he puts this video out. According to the story, he was hesitant when he was asked to perform this stunt again in front of a larger crowd because he didn't want an aggressive slant on Bigfoot's image at the time.
Bigfoot's a nice truck. He's not a monster truck. I told that guy. I told him, hey, mister, after you're done taking my wife out on a date, we're going to have a serious talk about this monster truck business. I want people to like Bigfoot. I don't want to be scared of Bigfoot.
Everybody loves Bigfoot. Little did he know that wanton destruction is what the American people wanted.
But as much as Americans seem to love chaos and destruction, you know what they love even more? A good rivalry. And this is where we meet Everett Jasmer. Everett Jasmer, a former drag racer from Minnesota, decided to get into the auto mechanic industry right out of high school and open his first shop out of his garage soon after, and quickly found himself attracted to four-wheel drive trucks. Everett bought his first four-wheel drive Chevy pickup in 1974. In the mid-70s, though, he closed his shop, and that's when he moved down south, and he became a heavy equipment mechanic. But he would eventually find his way back to Minnesota. He would, at this point, get married, start to settle down, find work as a mechanic at a local Chevy dealership, but not without taking what he had learned as a heavy equipment mechanic. With his unique knowledge, he opened a part-time shop out of his garage now in Minnesota again, but this time it was catering towards off-road vehicles, and it was named Off-Road Specialties.
This also happened to be the start of Everett using his 1970 Chevy pickup truck as an advertising tool for his shop, much like Bob Chandler did. And just like Bigfoot, Everett's truck had a badass handle as well, USA 1.
Well, do you know where that came from?
That was the license
plate. Yeah,
they
did a promotion that year on Chevy trucks where he worked. And when you bought the truck, you got a license plate that said USA 1.
Do you think one of his friends who also bought the same truck, he was there during that conversation, said, "Well, I'm going to be USA 2.
No.
And Everett was like, "No, you can't. That's derivative."
No, I don't think that happened because there weren't any license plates for USA 2. And also, Everett didn't have any friends. So there's a lot of holes in that story.
Anyway, despite USA 1 being just as formidable a monster truck as Bigfoot was, USA 1 wouldn't get national exposure until a little film was released in 1981 named Take Your Job and Shove It, the same film that we talked about earlier. That's right. USA 1 was the other monster truck pitted against Bigfoot in the landmark debut of monster trucks in popular media. Bigfoot won, by the way, in the race at the end. Spoiler alert.
It was staged. It wasn't a real race.
Well, just saying.
Yeah, we get
it's
it.
Important.
You like Bigfoot.
It's
we
important.
Get it. We get it.
I like big feet.
Okay. Well, gross.
this wasn't the first time the two had met.
That's right. In 1979, Everett heard that the Michael Jordan, the Scottie Pippen of truck off-roading performance would be coming to Minnesota at an off-roading event, and he would be the featured event. And that we're obviously talking about Bob Chandler. So Everett decided to go and meet his hero, but instead of this becoming a tale of a boy meeting his idol, it inevitably started an accidental rivalry that would go unmatched in the monster truck world for almost a decade.
Everett asked to go first, not knowing if he would be able to make it after Bigfoot dug huge ruts with Bob's big tire. Oh, sorry.
Is this sexual? Is this turning you on?
I think it might be. I absolutely do not have the maturity level to be able to handle that. That's just Bob's big tires. Everett, let me give it one more shot.
No, we're keeping that take. Come on.
All right. So... much to Everett's surprise, he and his Chevy made it out the other end. Although apparently he had to hit the nitrous a bit.
Oh well, who hasn't hit the nitrous a little bit here and there? Yeah. Bob like was, Fast and the Furious?
That's how I picture it. I don't know how nitrous actually works in cars. I just imagine.
I know it works outside of music venues in like downtown Philly after midnight.
What, this was early 80s? You never really associate any sort of car racing and nitrous together during this time. It was kind of interesting. Much less like a giant truck. Like, who puts nitrous in a giant truck?
Well, I'm just going to go ahead and speak personally that I have no interest in car racing at all, let alone from the 1970s. So they could be doing anything back then. They could be using giant fucking slingshots to start the races for all I know.
Which would also be fun. I would enjoy that. So, anyway, Bob was next, and he made it through with little effort. And now they had both made it to the other end. They took turns going back and forth through the mud. After two or three passes, Everett said that was enough on account of the fact that he still had a 200-mile drive home. So, not wanting the good times to end, Bob said to Everett, "Hop in," telling him that they were going to do something special.
Now, Everett? I've just been having such a great day.
Yeah.
This has just been such a special day, and I would hate to see, I'd hate to see it come to an end like this. And would you just like to hop up in here with Bigfoot with me, and let's just go for one more run through this mud together. What do you say? Just you and me.
I don't know if I can make it over these big tires.
Let me help you.
I might need a boost.
Oh, you got a little mud on your shirt there. Let me get that for you. There, Everett.
Everett hops into shotgun position in Bigfoot's cab.
Balls deep.
This is the most erotic scene of Bigfootcast we've ever. You know, they were looking at each other right in the eyes too. They both had that sparkling moment. So Everett hops into the shotgun position in Bigfoot's cap. Bob pulls up to the start line, smashes the gas in an unfortunate twist no one saw coming. He gets stuck.
Everett, I just want you to know this has been the best day of my life.
And if I could be stuck in the mud with anybody, it'd be you, Bob.
God damn it, Everett. I love monster trucks.
I love you.
And I love you, too.
It is also worth noting that Bob perhaps flew a little too close to the sun here because he attempted this last run in two-wheel drive instead of four-wheel.
He was trying to showboat for Everett a little bit?
He was trying to... Yeah, I guess he was. He was trying to impress his date a little bit. So in an act motivated by the best of intentions, Everett jumps out, wallows through the 5 or 6 foot deep of mud all the way back to USA 1. Bigfoot is pulled free by USA 1 and a rivalry begins.
I'm coming for you, Bob. I can't picture life without you, Bob. Everett, you gotta go save yourself now. You know, we had our fun and we both knew the dangers starting this journey together. God damn it now, Everett. Don't make me cry now.
So anyway, Bigfoot gets pulled out by USA 1 in this tender, heartfelt scene, and that starts the perceived rivalry of these two trucks.
And we say perceived because Bob and Everett would go on to become great friends throughout their life. The optics of this new truck, though, however, that could contend and even upstage the great Bigfoot, started a dialogue with monster truck fans that this avant-garde phenomenon could have the thrill and excitement of the circus with the rivalry of professional sports, propelling it one step closer to what the sport is today. And together, these two would be two of the forefathers of monster trucks that would help grow the sport into the billion-dollar industry that it is today, as we are leading to.
You know, there was also that moment, and I think there was some marketing that went on here as well that we don't have to go super deep into, but you know, there was that moment as USA 1 was pulling Bigfoot out where somebody that was watching the whole thing went, "Ooh, Chevy's better than Ford."
Oh, yeah, I thought about that a lot. That, like, yeah. How more perfect could that be? Like, yeah. Chevy versus Ford?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like, I think Bob Chandler just picked Ford by chance. They didn't even know each other until this, so it was complete accident. But how perfect is that?
Now, Bob, it's just not going to work. You're a Ford guy. You've You know, you've bought Fords your whole life. I'm a Chevy guy.
Damn what people think, Everett. I don't care what they'll say. This love is too real. I know most people say a Ford guy and a Chevy guy could never just get in a cab together and go driving just balls deep in the mud.
I don't know, Bob. This is...
I want to prove them wrong.
Our preferred truck brands is just driving a wedge.
God damn it, Everett. Why can't you see past that? Why can't you see that my love is bigger than that?
In 1983, Bob and Everett had another opportunity, possibly because of the buzz they had created in Minnesota. Bob was asked to do the That's Incredible show.
No, you're saying it wrong. It's the That's Incredible show.
By now, Bob had upgraded to 66-inch tires, and the producers told him that he wanted Bob to race Everett across a bed of about 50 broke-down cars. This meant Everett needed to have the same 66-inch tires to make it a competitive race, and with only a couple weeks of lead time, Everett managed to fit his rig with 1,000-pound tires right on race day. In an interview, Everett recalls the event. It was a fantastic time. Of course, we got a lot of exposure out of it. There were a few other guys building trucks at the time. We were 3 or 4 years into what people were calling monster trucks, but That's Incredible was a trigger, and people started building trucks all over the place. The promoters made hay out of it. That was a major step in promoting the whole monster truck sport.
And it was by 1985, I think, that Chandler had built more Bigfoot trucks, all Fords still, and was sending them to, he sent them to events in some of the nation's biggest stadiums across the country. And these exhibitions now featured swarms of other trucks, like the 1,500 horsepower Barefoot from Illinois, which appeared in a ZZ Top video and also in an episode of Knight Rider, I think. And its builder, Fred, traveled with two actual black bears, Sugar and Spice. And
I love Barefoot.
I remember the first Barefoot. Time we tried this episode, for anyone that didn't, for whatever reason, not listen to part one of this. This whole arc, the Monster Truck arc, is a redemption of an episode that we failed at releasing last year. And
we
last
did
year,
actually record it.
We recorded it, but we never released it, and you'll never hear it, and we'll lie. We'll lie if you ask us for it. And,
unless you pay us money.
We are not.
I'll whore myself out.
No, we're not doing that. But not that there's anything wrong with that. But that's just not what we're doing. And but Baron, you really liked this character. Like, you talked about it a lot. What do you remember about him?
You have more detail than I ever had on him. But I just remember that I saw that in a little excerpt somewhere, and I was like, "Whoa, that's the best character."
So you just found the fact that he had bears, and you just clap like a seal at your computer for a half hour, like, I like bears. I like bears. Baron likes bears. I like bears because my name is Baron.
He's the only guy to have actual bears in... Look, Bigfoot doesn't go around...
You say that like it was an obvious move for them to make.
Well, what I think is funny about the whole thing is, okay, number one, the name is derivative of Bigfoot. And number two, he adds bear into Bigfoot, but he also actually has the bears. Where did he get the bears? What's this guy's story? I don't know. There's a lot going on. There's a lot to unpack here.
Well, you ready for another layer?
Sure.
He was also called Barefoot because he drove barefoot.
Right, I get it, but he
so
obviously
it's a play on, it's a double entendre. It's Barefoot because it's Bigfoot with bears,
shit.
But then he also drives barefoot.
I missed what you were saying originally.
So when someone's like, "Hey,"
God,
when they come up to him and they're like, "Hey, are you called Barefoot because you got those bears?" And he goes, "No, this is why I'm Bigfoot." And he shows him his stinky ass feet.
Anyway, I just picture a moment the giant truck pulls up, and you know how in old videos of SeaWorld, they would show the lady that's riding on two dolphins at the same time. I just picture this, you know, the cab opens up and this guy, these bears just come out and this guy's just riding two bears like those two dolphins, you know, just balancing on them.
It's obvious that you like the bears.
I love the bears.
You haven't glown this much in the past 2 weeks. So good. I'm glad we brought it up. I'm glad I could do that for you.
In the mid-1980s, promoters began evolving shows from car crushing and mud bogging exhibitions to races. And in 1988, TNT Motorsports announced the Monster Truck Challenge, marketed as the most powerful sport on Earth. This new racing series would get big-time television exposure on ESPN.
It was a season-long circuit of races that concluded with the Monster Truck Challenge National Finals, also known as the Renegade TNT National Championship, which would in turn crown the sport's first-ever nationally recognized champion. And after a harrowing series of bouts between the top two dogs, once again Bigfoot and USA won, lovers and rivals, you know, best of both worlds. So much
drama.
This
is a tale as old as time.
Totally, yeah. USA 1 would go on to be crowned the first national champion of monster trucks, despite having to start from the absolute bottom bracket as a result of having to miss the first 3 months of races because of a scheduling conflict with a promo that they had with Chevy, where for the first 3 months of the year, they had to travel to various outlets promoting products. And they already signed the Everett already signed the contract. And it was for a year, so they were going to have to sit out for a year. So what actually happened, those of you that listened to part one, was he got his youngest person on, like a young upstarter on the team that showed promise at racing, that Rod guy, he let him race USA 1 in the circuit starting in April. So the TNT Monster Truck Challenge would continue until...
Wait. So Everett was taking another truck around doing the tour while Rod was racing USA One? Okay, I see.
At this point, these guys all had different... They had multiple builds. You know, the top guys.
Right. I know Bigfoot had...
At this point, Bigfoot had four.
He was already
on Bigfoot 4, and I think USA One had a couple iterations. And, you know, a little bit more industry backstory. The Everett Bob story is really interesting because Bob was just kind of this really successful entrepreneur that had the financial backing to really make the best truck. And Everett was kind of like an underdog. You know, he didn't have nearly as much funding and expertise as Bob. So he was really the dark horse and ascended from being number two to eventually number one. One other fun fact that I meant to throw in there before is that Bigfoot, the name didn't come from the size of the truck at all, but because they had to constantly replace the foot pedal and like the throttle cords because Bob's Bigfoot would keep breaking the truck. The TNT Monster Truck Challenge would continue until about 1991, when the USA Hot Rod Association bought out TNT Motorsports and replaced it with a little known show called Monster Wars. Monster Wars was very controversial because of how hard it leaned on the theatrical aspect of the sport. Kind of really rocked the spectrum in that direction. What were once subtle rivalries between racers, usually only known by the indoctrinated fans that followed closely enough to catch on, were now replaced with actual clips of basically mascots, superhero-esque personifications of each truck that would come out before the competitions and actually trash talk, like they would shit talk each other, representing the truck as their avatars in attempts to make it more like what you'd expect from, say, professional wrestling, and the fans fucking hated it. It only lasted one season before it was canceled. The fat cats behind the failed project learned from their mistakes and re-released the show as Monster Jam soon after, kind of ditching the superheroes. Although I think Monster Jam was kind of a whole thing, like it kind of was meant to be its own thing. It wasn't like a sequel or anything. In fact, I don't really think it was anything like Monster Wars. I think that was kind of the point. It was like a clean break. But anyway, Monster Jam did maintain some of the pageantry of Monster Wars, with like the arena and all that and the colors and whatever. Like, it was very poppy. It was very marketable. But most importantly of all, they learned that newer audience were less excited about the feats of the old guard, like sled pulls and mud bogging, and replaced with just the two biggest crowd pleasers, the racing and the freestyle competitions, which came back into vogue after racers like Gravedigger rose to stardom in the late 80s and early 90s.
Gravedigger. It is also, I would say, it's worth noting that a lot of these stunts that you see today were just were not doable. They were not plausible with the trucks these guys started out with. So there's no way that you're going to coax a 10,000 pound piece of steel truck to launch off a ramp 30 feet in the air, land on its back tires, and then go back through an obstacle course. Once again, pioneered by Team Bigfoot, Bigfoot 4, as mentioned previously, is the first of these trucks to have a fully fabricated frame, which would later become mostly plexiglass wrapped around metal roll cage that came out in 1984. The importance of this is to illustrate that this is the first true monster truck to hit the track with specifically customized bodies. So you have the capacity to push the technology in a specific direction now, so which will allow the trucks, you know, later on to do these crazy freestyle tricks, that sort of thing.
Yeah, I mean, anyone that really knows about the monster truck industry, which now we both do, they classify it as three generations of monster trucks. There's first generation, second generation, third generation monster trucks. The first generation were just like the early ones, like the first Bigfoot or the first USA one, which were just these heavily modded stock trucks that would weigh somewhere between like 10 to 15,000 pounds. They would be about 1,000 horsepower, so like underpowered for their scale. And, you know, really dangerous, kind of, because they also weren't very well regulated, and then there wasn't like a playbook yet. And then you get the second generation, which was, they modded it in the direction of, well, it's still a truck, but bigger, you know, like
they kind of knew what they were doing.
Custom frames, but still very much following the model of like, what if we just made a truck bigger and more powerful? So like an example of a second generation monster truck would have 2000 horsepower instead of 1000 horsepower, and they would weigh even more. And the problem that I read was, you know, certain drivers like Gravedigger would really wow crowds by launching. Like, he was the first guy to launch in the air, really. Problem is, when other people started doing it, including him, like, he got hurt a lot too, people would get seriously injured landing these massive overpowered vehicles from 30-foot jumps. So like the cars would come back destroyed, and there's people that like broke their backs or like their necks or whatever doing this. So Bob Chandler, being the pioneer from beginning to end, top to bottom, snout to tail, soup to nuts, created basically the third generation of monster trucks, which were these fully fabricated tube frame chassis, and you still had the modified engines and everything. But yeah, the idea was lightweight, so they were half the weight. I think they got them down to like 9,000 or 8,000 pounds from the fulcrum of the 15 or 16,000 pounds that they were edging on. Some of the bigger ones were edging on it. And the idea was that these could do these jumps. And part of that was also they went from six-inch suspension to 30-inch suspension. Cantilever supports, which were just these, like, massive suspension systems that, like, kind of replaced the leaf springs and old, springs of the old guard of monster trucks, and just fully reinventing the medium, you know?
And now they do beautiful dances.
It's like a fucked up ballet. It's like an American trailer trash ballet out there. Like, I know there was that, like, and this is what inspired us to do the first episode, but we were at the Mexican place that we like pre-COVID. Ugh. We were watching monster trucks, and we were just kind of like, whoa, like, you know, how much industry is there behind what we're seeing? You know, like, there's monster truck on the surface, and then there's like, you know, I mean, not to put too fine a point on it, but basically the last two episodes that we covered, like, a lot went into it, and it's really just a lot of physics and engineering and nerds, and a lot less of like the redneck rowdy boys that you picture.
Who's going to be the first to send a monster truck into space? That's what I want to know. Which country?
I think the low-hanging fruit here would be to say Elon Musk would do it. he's gonna throw a couple of 66-inch tires on a Tesla truck and just throw it up there.
I just picture like, you know, some little green men, some Martians are rolling around on their little Martian car on the surface of Mars, and then boom, all of a sudden the spacecraft,
the monster
lands.
Cyber truck just goosh. Oh man, ouch. And that's basically how we get to monster trucks now. I mean, that's the industry now. There's no cyber monster trucks yet, but who knows, maybe one day. Anyway, Monster Jam is a $1 billion-a-year industry, and it holds over 350 events every year in 30 different countries. And a professional monster truck driver in the top tiers of the industry can make anywhere between $25,000 to $50,000 a year. And the trucks themselves can cost up to almost $250,000 each. That's it. That's Monster Truck. So glad we got to redo this. I love this topic.
Good redemption arc.
Redemption arc. Yeah, we are back, motherfuckers. And next week, we're going to come back with one of your favorite features, the Dirty Bits. And don't worry, I know some of you out there are thinking, Sam's going to yell at us because we only listen to the Dirty Bits. And I've gone to therapy, and I'm not going to yell at you guys anymore.
Are you feeling less angry?
You people like what you like, and that's your prerogative. And I'm not here to tell you how to feel, you know? I got to find my center. And
you've been doing really well.
Your center is just to enable these guys to listen to the low-hanging fruit of our podcast and not the fruits of our labor, which are the episodes that we spend hours on. But you know what? That's your prerogative. Anyway, and then after that, we're going to come with a brand new topic.
That vein in the middle of your forehead really is bulging out there. It's gigantic. Should maybe calm down.
What's our social media, Baron?
Hey, I just want everybody to know, by the way, I'm quitting my job, going to find a couple of bears at the zoo. I'm taking on Barefoot. I'm going to be the new Barefoot.
You're picking up the handle of Barefoot.
I'm picking up the legacy. So our social media, you can email me at infocast5000@gmail.com. Stay tuned for more information on where you can reach us at social media.
Infocast 5000, spelt exactly like the podcast that you just listened to on Instagram, which has nice, fun content for you to watch and listen to and comment on and all the good stuff every week.
Get on it. And if you want to make us famous, go in and click that subscribe button on the Apple's podcast if you got that, or Spotify. Subscribe to us. You'll get fresh podcast episodes once a week.
Yeah, you'll get updated, and it'll make us smile a little bit as we dredge through the new year.
Exactly.
All right. We love you.
Bye-bye, everybody.
Bye.